Hey, we get it. There's some people in your circle that might not get this industry. They might not even think this is a legitimate business model. Well, today we're bringing to you someone who comes from the other side, someone who has chosen to own, turn around, invest in, lead, manage companies that are specifically in the direct selling, network marketing, multi-level marketing industry. He has a lot of experience in this industry, and he's going to share a little bit about what do investors and business owners see as the qualities that attract them to this very legitimate business model. Welcome to the MLM You Decide podcast.
We're your hosts, Janine Finney and Laura Evans.
Each week, we'll bring you conversations about the good and the misunderstood aspects of MLM, multi-level marketing, network marketing.
It's time to get informed because making a decision with only half the information could be the most expensive decision you make.
Let's dive into today's episode. Thank you for joining us today. We have the pleasure of introducing to you, our listeners, someone who has been a mentor to me for years. I mean, I would say in large part, the career that I've had, I owe to him because he believed in me at a time when maybe I hadn't demonstrated how much I could contribute and a difference I could make. And I learned a lot by watching him navigate and lead a company that he was responsible for running in this industry at that time and invested in. So I want to introduce you to Jim Northrup. I'm going to share his bio as I read it so that I get his credentials well said out there versus just by my memory. So Jim has served as the principal of Winfield Consulting for the last several years, providing consulting services and counsel primarily focused on the direct selling, network marketing, multi-level marketing industry. Prior to founding Winfield, Jim served as CEO to several companies, leading them through turnaround and renewed growth. And prior to that, he had been involved with a CEO of a nutritional network marketing company. He also was the president CEO of a $400 million school fundraising business that operated for 45 years in the US and Canada, which successfully was sold to Time Inc. And he's also been responsible for a privately held direct sales company and helped turn it around for significant growth and profitable business. He's been involved in several different in executive leadership positions of several brands you would recognize, such as J. Crew, which is where he and I actually first met, in the fashion jewelry brand Monet. He also was involved with Hallmark, General Mills, Quaker Oats, and he's got just a very strong educational background as well. Holds an MBA from Columbia University and a bachelor's degree from Brown University. He's the former chairman of the Direct Selling Association and has served more than 20 years on the board of the Direct Selling Association, as well as several other corporate and nonprofit boards. Jim, you've done a lot. I mean, when I read through your background, does it feel like you've done a lot? Because you've accomplished quite a bit.
Well, it feels like I'm as old as I really am, Laura, actually. And thank you for all your kind words. I'm as old as dirt at this point, which is you get a lot of life experience if you live long enough. So, but thank you for the kind words.
You're welcome. Let's go back to your first introduction to this industry. What's your first recollection about getting to know the direct selling, the network marketing, multi-level marketing industry?
Well, from a business point of view, it was interesting. I was at the time running a business that was in the fashion jewelry business, as you mentioned, Monet. And we were doing research about our growth potential and started studying where consumers were buying their products. And we're very surprised to discover that actually, even though Monet at the time was the biggest brand in fashion jewelry through department stores, that Avon's fashion jewelry business was actually more than twice what Monet's was. So I began to scratch my head and say, what goes on in this industry? So we talked with consumers at the time. And what we learned, which I think is still very much a value of direct sales, is that the appeal was that a person was actually recommending to you what you would look good in and responding to what your real needs were. So it wasn't the sort of transactional base that you get in a retail environment, but rather person to person, somebody who really cared, and began to realize the strength of the direct selling model in that regard.
So it sounds like that is what maybe inspired you to invest in this industry, or tell us about that. What made you?
Well, actually, yeah, it was as with most things in life, Janine, it was an opportunity. There was a company that had been owned by a big corporate enterprise and had not done well under big corporate kind of management. And some friends and investors, along with me, decided that this was a company that had an enormous amount of potential. And it happened to be in the direct selling business. So I walked into this much blinder than I should have been about entering into what turned out to be a whole new business model. So I guess what I would say is I got into this business the old-fashioned way. I bought a company.
Wow. That's a great way to get into it.
And it turned out to be one of the best decisions of my life, both from a personal point of view and from an economic point of view.
Great. And so you have been on the board of the DSA. Tell us more about the role of the DSA in this industry.
Okay, the Direct Selling Association is the primary advocate. It really serves two key roles. The first is that it's the voice of advocacy for the direct selling industry. So it, in a variety of constituencies, talks about what the value of direct selling is to the economy, the difference it makes to people, and it also serves as a defender of our business model to individuals who attack us, to regulators who want to undermine our very way of doing business. So in that respect, the DSA is very much an advocacy arm for our industry. The other purpose it serves is collecting executives from the more than 300 direct selling companies that are in the US together to share their experiences and ideas and learn how to be better in terms of providing real opportunity, great products, and approaches to doing business that work very effectively for our literally hundreds of thousands of representatives across the US.
Yeah, I love the work that organization does. And I often refer to the DSA.org as a resource for anyone that's listening to us. There's data sheets, statistic information available to help you form your own opinion about the market research and the legitimacy of this business model. So I encourage people to check that out. Speaking of that type of thing, what do you find is the most common misconception about this business?
I think it's the really lack of understanding of how this business works. Its real reason for being is providing people who care about their products, about the products that they're selling, with real information and the ability not just to create a business for themselves, but to do something that they can be passionate about and join a community that really is reinforcing of their values, not just from the point of view of the products they sell, but their personal sort of ability to achieve and change themselves. People look at this industry from the outside and they view it as, oh, those people are doing nothing more than just selling people on a business opportunity. And that's really not the case. when you get into it, what you realize is, yes, the business opportunities can be very real, but there are many other factors which contribute to your sense of accomplishment, well-being, serving other people, being part of a community that are sort of constantly reinforcing your identity and your sense of belonging to something that's bigger than you. So all of those qualities, I think, are lost if somebody looks at this purely from a business point of view. And yet, from a business point of view, it's an extraordinarily good model. Because if you look at it from the point of view of an investor or a manager or an executive in the company, it provides a very real cost-effective way to get your message out much more effectively than you can in any sort of retail environment, because you have individuals who are passionate about your product, who know your product, who are talking with people they know and helping them to understand why this product may benefit them. That's a very different situation than you can find in any other way that people can acquire products at this point in time. And in fact, in this last year, it's really come into its own in terms of direct sales being very much now, in part because of the dislocations that occurred during COVID, but a mainstream way for people to buy quality products and understand how those products can enhance their lives.
Yes, yes, it certainly has. I'm so thankful that even technology like we're using today, to the ability to order online, all of those things have made what we do in this you know, selling model able to do it, even despite what the circumstances are. And it's made, you know, unfortunately, what we've been through has made more traditional business perhaps a little harder. But it's been, it's leaned into and helped boost what it is that we're doing. Along absolutely. That line.
Yeah, if I could just add to that, Laura. I think absolutely. Two things came together this year that I've been in this business a long time, as you know, that I think really reinforced the strength of the model. The first was that when the retail environment was dislocated, people had to look for new ways to buy the things that they wanted and needed. And secondly, they began to have not ideal experiences with pure online retail, where they weren't quite as reliable, either in terms of products or delivery, as they had anticipated, and trying to find a real person to deal with if things didn't go right was really tough. So at that, from a customer point of view, direct sales really came into its own, because there's a real live person there who really cares about their customers, who's there not just to talk with them about the benefits of their product, but also there to make sure that they get it, that it works the way they want it to work, that follows up with them, all of those things. And at the same time, as more and more people and more segments of the population, particularly younger people, became familiar with direct sales because it was a great way to buy products, they became familiar with it as a way to make some extra money. And so we discovered that during the course of this year, I worked with a number of companies, that whole new segments that never really considered direct sales before had begun to participate in a very significant way. So despite all the dislocations of this last year, in general, many direct selling companies have really prospered, and the people within those companies have been able to prosper as well.
I love it that you shared that, and that you shared that, you know, companies are looking as a way to diversify their channel to offer this kind of business model. It just helps bring that credibility to it, because so many people do not learn about this way of doing business in school or at university, although I know the DSEF has been actively involved in helping promote that. They just discredit it. You know, their experience is a secondhand experience from an uncle or an aunt or, you know, somebody, a friend that had a bad experience, and then that becomes their experience with it. So we love to be able to let people know that that's not what investors see, and that's not what the business world sees. This type of business model is a legitimate business model and is a good one for customers, for the customer experience. So that's wonderful. Let's talk about
one of the other things. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, Laura, but one of the other things that's emerged is, as you pointed out in my background, I spent much of my career in conventional corporate America and conventional retail. And I still have many friends who are in those businesses. And frankly, when I first went into the direct sales business, they were somewhat disparaging of really, why are you buying a company that's in that business, Jim? And I said, because it's a great business. There was still lots of skepticism, frankly, on their part. In the last year, I've had more of them call me than you can even imagine, saying, could you explain this to me again? How does this work? Because as they're looking at environments where they're closing stores and they're unable to reach their customers, they're finally scratching their heads and saying, oh, so you can provide real customer service and you have somebody who actually knows the product, who can sell it to someone. So from a business perspective, it's a great way to actually combine products and information and convey them to people from a very trusted source. So right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I love that. I love what you're adding to that. And that's exactly right. I want everyone to hear that. So let's go back to the role of the Direct Selling Association for a second. And let's just talk about many of the people that listen, including Janine and I, are field leaders. What is there from your viewpoint that we as field leaders can do to be more responsible about, you know, protecting and advocating for the reputation of this industry?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to be honest. This industry is not a get-rich-quick scheme. So making inflated claims about earnings, most people join our companies because they're passionate about the product, they love the community, and it's a way to make some extra money. And maintaining that sense of those priorities, if you will, is probably the most important thing we can do, because we get a bad reputation as an industry, largely from people who make overstated claims about the earning opportunity or the efficacy of their products. So you just keep it honest, and you do this, you're selling your products to friends and you are honest with them, whether that product is your products or your opportunity.
Great, I love that answer. So what would you say to somebody that is considering getting into network marketing? How should they choose a company, and how can they set up the right expectations about what to expect in building this kind of business?
Okay, I think the two most important things to consider when you're choosing a company in big picture words is culture. That is, you like what you see in terms of the individual you're interacting with, and you like what you see in terms of the community, because that speaks volumes in terms of what the company is really about. And that isn't only in the field community, it's also the corporate community. So you want to make sure that it's a culture that you really want to be part of. Since I've been in this industry, I've heard dozens of times that people do this because it's way more fun than their day job, and they feel way better about what they're doing, and they get way more recognized for what they accomplish. Well, that's all culture. So be very, very sensitive to that culture, and frankly, avoid situations where people are overpromising, either about their product or about their opportunity. If it sounds too good to believe, it is. This is like any other business, and there have been many entrepreneurs who have been very successful in this business. There are also many people who do it because they make a little extra money and they want to be part of a community. All of those reasons are good reasons. But if someone is promising you the moon, be very, very skeptical, because getting to the moon requires a lot of work and a lot of commitment, and is not realistic, frankly, for every person who joins the business.
Yes, thank you so much. That is important. And you really can get a sense for what the culture of a company is by not just the person you're interacting with, but we always encourage you to go check out and listen to some of the company live events. Many companies, even if they're not having in-person events right now, they have them online, and you'll get a real feel for what they value, what is a priority, and just whether trust your feelings about it. Trust your connection with it, because it's what you're going to live with for the longest. So you want to be sure that that's something that you connect with. Hey, Jim, we love to wrap up with a couple of questions that are more for fun. One of them is, what is something that's making your life easier these days? It could be a gadget. It could be a book, a recipe, something. What are you loving these days?
We're on it, Laura.
Zoom, yeah.
Yeah, I frankly, had I contemplated a year ago, because it is just about a year since the lockdown started, that I would be spending 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a day on Zoom, I would have said, isn't going to happen. But this has allowed me not only to continue with my business, our business, but it's allowed me to stay in touch in a real way with friends and family. So I have virtually nightly, this is probably not an accolade, but cocktail hours with friends and my kids and their families to, just stay in touch. So it's really become my go-to thing. And having been someone who spent my life on airplanes, I'm not really looking forward to getting back into the airplane mode of life again. This works way too well, as far as I'm concerned. So,
yeah,
I agree with you. I love Zoom. I feel the same way about it. I feel like it's given me the opportunity to stay more connected with my grandkids, and we do a weekly happy hour on Sunday evenings, and I just think it's such a blessing that has come from this.
No, it really is, Judy, because I have 3 sons and they're all married and have kids, and we see each other. We're pretty close as a family, but we live all over. So the opportunities to see each other are relatively few and far between. It's every few months. Since this started, I think I put these weekly Zoom calls in place back in late March of last year, we see each other every week. We know way more about the details of our lives, and my grandchildren are on the calls as well. So everybody, it's an amazing thing to really enhance the degree of connection that you have. And interestingly, from a business point of view, as I worked with companies and watched them pivot after the pandemic started, in many cases, they were totally in-person companies, whether they were party plan or network marketing, and they were able to pivot very quickly onto this forum and similar forums to be able to not just continue their business, but actually increase their dollars per hour, because some of the downsides of packing everything up, going to somebody's house, all of those things are time consuming, and all of a sudden you were doing this and connecting with people from your own home. So I'm a huge fan, not a shareholder, unfortunately, but a huge fan.
Yeah. It's definitely made us more efficient, for sure. So we like to close with this question. We know that people in this industry are big givers. What is something that you love to give back to?
Well, I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to go to university. I was the first generation in my family that had gone to college. And it was because there were sufficient funds available to get loans and scholarships. So my biggest big give back really is to provide support for scholarships funds, both at my university and in general, so that kids have the opportunity to get educated to the extent that they want to, rather than being totally limited by their economic background. So that's probably my biggest focus. The other one is this industry. One of the most gratifying things for me about having happened into, I told you the story earlier, to the direct sales business, I had no idea the psychological gratification that one gets from watching individuals succeed, come into their own, establish confidence and skill levels that they never thought they would, as well as, in many cases, economic benefits. But it's an industry that I have a lot of time for supporting, because I think it really does make a huge difference in literally hundreds of thousands of people's lives.
I agree.
Yes, it certainly does. And such is this labor of love of a podcast that we do, to try to point some of that viewpoint out and balance the viewpoint so that people can make an educated decision, an informed decision about whether this industry is right for them, whether this business is right for them too. So thank you very much. Jim, is there anything else that you want to say in closing that we didn't ask about?
No, thank you. Thank you for doing this. I think it's great. I really do, because all of us need advocates and need to better understand what really is happening. And you can get a lot of misimpression about not just our industry, but a lot of things if you don't listen to a variety of sources and are sort of limited to just one experience or one voice. So thank you for doing this. I think it's great.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. You guys take care. It's great to see you. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. We hope you gained some clarity from today's show. If you did, please share it with your friends, family, and colleagues.
Because when you share it and drop a review, it helps other people find us and helps us get this message out. Please join us each week to hear from people who are in the trenches and have their own personal experience with this business. And if you'd like to learn more about this topic, subscribe to our show and visit our website. We'd also like to recommend two books co-authored by Janine Finney and her daughter, Lori Merhead, The Flip Flop CEO and Does the Shoe Fit? The Guide to Help You Decide.
We invite you to join our Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn communities as well.
Be sure to tune in to our next episode, because making a decision with only half the information could be the most expensive mistake you can make.